Heyo, welcome to this episode of Linguistics with Laura. In this episode, we're going to continue our discussion of phonetics, but complicate this sub-branch of linguistics even further with the topic of phonology. I bet that's exciting news to you. It's certainly quite exciting news to me. But for real, phonology can get really fascinating and nuanced, which are two characteristics of things that I find incredibly fascinating. So let us begin. First of all, what even is phonology? Well, phonology is pretty similar to phonetics, but the difference is phonology focuses less on individual phonemes and sounds and instead looks at the patterns and relationships among these different phonemes and sounds. The reason that phonology is its own branch of linguistics also has to do with the essential fact that speech is a continuous signal. In natural, free-flowing speech, sounds overlap and influence each other. However, as listeners, our brains don't necessarily register this fact. When we listen to people speak, we don't consciously pick up the unique ways that others pronounce phonemes. In fact, every speaker says their speech sounds or phonemes a little bit differently, but in our conscious minds, when we listen to these ever so subtly different speech sounds, we perceive them as being the same. If we didn't have this ability to perceive subtly different versions of phonemes, also known as allophones, we would have a pretty difficult time understanding what in the world other people were saying. So let's talk more about allophones. In Japanese, the sounds u and r are not considered distinct phonemes from one another, but instead are considered allophones of the same phoneme. So this means that a word with the sound u in it could be replaced by the sound r, and speakers of the Japanese language would still be able to understand this word and its meaning. However, this is not the case in English, because to English speakers, the sounds l and r are phonemes, not allophones. They are perceptually distinct units from one another, so that the usage of one phoneme instead of another changes the meaning and thus understanding of a word. For example, take the words rack and lack. Obviously, in the English language, these two words mean something different from one another. The former refers to a framework with rails, bars, or hooks that is used to hold things. Of course, it can also be an informal term used to refer to body parts that are typically unique to females, but we won't get into that. Anyway, the latter, lack, is a word that describes the absence of something. So, obviously, these are different words with different meanings. And the way we distinguish these words from one another is by replacing the first speech sounds in the word with the other. However, in Japanese, if we pretend that the words lack and rack were words in the Japanese language, then these two words would mean the same thing, and that's because the sounds l and r are allophones. In other words, allophones are any of the phonetic variations of phonemes in a language which do not contribute to a difference in meaning. The last part of that definition is key. An allophone is the actual physical speech sound that is produced, while a phoneme is the mental representation of the speech sound that distinguishes meaning. So now let's look at some allophones in English. First, the plosives, which are called plosives because they, well, sort of explode when you say them. These sounds are also voiceless alveolar stops, and they include the sounds p, k, and t. In English, these sounds can be said in different ways. Put your hand in front of your mouth and say the word pit. You should feel a puff of air against the palm of your hand. Now say the word spit. Most likely, you won't feel any puff of air in saying this word. This seems weird, since the only difference between the words pit and spit is the addition of the phoneme s in the word spit. You would think the two words would be the same except for that, but they're not. In English, typically, when a plosive consonant is the first sound in a word, we use the aspirated allophone of the phoneme. The aspirated version is the version of the speech sound that produces the puff of air because the speaker is exhaling as they pronounce the sound. This is what occurs when saying the word pit. When saying the word spit, however, we use the unaspirated allophone of the phoneme p, and probably some spit comes out as well. The unaspirated allophone does not produce a puff of air, and that's why you most likely didn't feel the air when saying the word spit. Try this with other words, for example, top and stop, pair and spare, and you can think of a lot more. This rule and pattern should be present in all of these words because of the English language's usage of aspirated and unaspirated allophones, depending on what surrounds the plosive sound. In essence, the rule is as follows. Voiceless stops are aspirated when they occur initially in a stressed syllable, and, on the flip side, these plosives are unaspirated when they follow a syllable initial like S. Where allophones get even more fun, or at least more fun in my opinion, is with the phoneme T. This phoneme has several allophones. In fact, it might be the phoneme with the most variant phones and thus the highest number of allophones. First, as we just discussed, there is the aspirated T allophone. However, it by no means ends there. Have you ever noticed someone say a word with a T sound and it sounds weirdly harsh or formal? How about this? Do you typically say the word B-A-T-T-E-R-Y like this, battery, or like this, battery? Most likely, you say it the second way. To say it the first would even sound kind of weird and formal, like British or something. Well, that's because you're using what's called a flap or tap in the second pronunciation of the word. This phone occurs when your tongue briefly flaps or taps against your alveolar ridge to make a r sound, hence why it's called a flap. If you were to say the word like battery, you would most likely be using the unaspirated t sound. The flap is also used as an allophone for the phoneme d. Take the word ladder. Instead of saying the word like ladder with a hard d, you typically just say ladder. Your tongue lightly taps against your alveolar ridge to make that same r sound. The rule for the flap sound is as follows. It only occurs when preceded by a stressed vowel and is followed by an unstressed vowel. But the allophones for the t phoneme still don't end there. Take the words cat, catapult, maggot, and slit. Do you notice how these words kind of just rapidly cut off? You don't typically say cat, catapult, maggot, or slit, unless perhaps you're trying to make a strong point. See what I just did there? Instead of rapidly cutting off the t sound in the word point, I enunciated the t sound. But it probably didn't sound normal when I did that, did it? Well, that's because of another allophone of the phoneme t, and that is the glottal stop. This sound is, of course, a glottal sound, where the constriction occurs at the level of the glottis. So what happens when you say a glottal stop is that there is an audible release of air after complete closure or constriction at the glottis. Typically, in words that end with a vowel and then a t, we don't say the t phone, but instead we use a glottal stop. So instead of saying cat and maggot, we say cat and maggot. Sometimes, though, the rules relating to glottal stops and flap t's get blurred depending on what other words surround the word. Take the word white, as in the color, and then the word umbrella. Say the color that I just said by itself. Now say umbrella. You probably said the word white with a glottal stop, like I just did. However, now say the color that I just mentioned and the word umbrella immediately after, like you were using both words next to each other in a sentence. For example, take the white umbrella with you to the store. There's a good chance that instead of using a glottal stop for the word white, which again I just used now, you probably used a flap instead. So why? Aren't words that end in t sound supposed to end with glottal stops? Well, yes, but not when they're followed by words that start with vowels. Because the word umbrella starts with a vowel, it's much easier to continue speech by using a flap instead of a glottal stop. If you were to say the color that I mentioned and then the word book, you would still most likely use a glottal stop. It's when the word is followed by a vowel that things are different. In the end, our speech patterns and rules are shaped by whatever is fastest and physically easiest for the speaker to say, while still having the word make sense and convey its intended meaning. This brings us to assimilation. In phonology, assimilation is a sound change that occurs where some phonemes change to be more similar to other phonemes that surround them, in that case becoming allophones. There's one very famous example of assimilation, and it has to do with vowels. Pinch your nose and say the word honk. Now keep pinching your nose and say the word hawk. What you should find is that when you pinch your nose and say the word honk, it's not only harder to say this word, but you should also feel a vibration. When you pinch your nose and say the word hawk, however, it should be pretty easy to say the word, and you shouldn't feel a vibration. Well, the reason for this is because the word honk has a nasal consonant and the word hawk does not. When you say a nasal consonant, sound resonates in your nasal cavity, and that's what's happening when you say the word honk. However, try pinching your nose again, start to say the word honk, but stop before you get to the ng sound. You should still feel some vibration. Now try the same thing with the word hawk. Start to say the word, but stop before reaching the k sound. You shouldn't feel any vibration. So why does this happen? The words honk and hawk use the same ah vowel, so why do they act differently? Because vowels that precede nasal consonants assimilate, they take on characteristics of the nasal consonant that they will be followed by. So when you say the word honk, you're not simply saying the consonant h, ah, ng, and k. Instead, you're saying the sounds h, ong, ng, and k. You are using a nasalized version or allophone of the phoneme ah, which in transcription can be represented with a little tilde or squiggle, as some people like to call it, over the vowel. In the word hawk, on the other hand, there are no nasal consonants, so you simply say the phones h, ah, and k. This same rule occurs anytime a vowel precedes a nasal consonant. In this case, the vowel will be nasalized. Try saying the word honk without the nasalized vowel. It will sound something like this, ha-nk. It's actually kind of hard to do, again, because we speak in a way that is physically easiest for us. I guess you could say we're just kind of lazy when it comes to pronunciation. Take the verb past tense inflectional morpheme, ed. When asked how we show the past tense form of verbs, we typically respond by saying that you add a d or ed. However, this is only sometimes the case. Take the word passed, as in Kate passed the ball. Yes, in spelling we add an ed to the word pass. However, we don't actually say a d sound. Instead, we say a t sound. Say the word passed and put your fingers against your vocal cords. You should notice vibration, or phonation, only during the production of the vowel sound a. That's because all of the other sounds in this word are voiceless, and we end the word passed with the voiceless alveolar stop, or t sound. This is, of course, due to assimilation. Because the word pass ends with a voiceless alveolar sound, the past tense ed ending assimilates and it is also voiceless. On the flip side, if you take a word like tame, which ends with a voiced nasal consonant, then you add a voiced ed sound. Put your fingers up to your vocal cords and say tamed. The last sound in this word should vibrate, and that's because it's the d sound, or a voiced alveolar stop. Now, what about words that end in the sound t or d? Take the word faded. Obviously, we added another syllable to the word, and that syllable was a schwa followed by a d. How about the word stated? Again, we added another syllable, and that would be the schwa d. When words end in alveolar stops in English, we just about always add this schwa d syllable to the end of a word. To summarize, when we say any other verbs that end with voiced sounds, we use the voiced d phone in past tense, and when we say any other verbs that end with voiceless sounds, we use the t phone. So now, how about plural forms? Well, as you know, most nouns in English can be pluralized by the letter S. However, this doesn't always mean that just slapping a voiceless alveolar fricative, aka the S sound, is the correct way to pluralize a noun. Take the noun batch, as in a batch of cookies. What happens when there is more than one batch? Well, of course, the word becomes batches. And what about the word badge? Well, of course, it becomes badges. And how about bash? Then we would have bashes. And bus becomes buses, buzz becomes buzzes. This is because these sounds are what are called sibilants, which really just means that they make a hissing sound. Each of these sounds, in addition to the zh sound, cannot be followed by just an s sound, but instead, we English speakers add a whole other syllable, which is made up of a schwa followed by a z sound, z. So what about nouns that end with voiceless sounds? Well, the s remains an S sound, s, because it is voiceless, and speech sounds always follow what is around them due to assimilation. Mut becomes mutts, for example, voiceless. So when a noun ends in a voiced phoneme, we add not a plural s sound, but instead a plural z sound. For example, train becomes trains with a z sound. What you'll notice is that the rules for regular forms of plural word endings are sort of similar to the regular forms of word endings for verbs in the past tense. And once again, we see some patterns of the English language and its phonological systems. Even though you can argue that English is quite inconsistent when it comes to spelling and pronunciation, believe it or not, it does have some rules in regards to phonology that are more often followed than not. Speaking of following, make sure to look out for my next episode where I will give a brief overview on the history of the English language and how it came to be. If you're a history buff or just another nerd like me, I suspect you'll enjoy it, so I'll catch you then. Thanks for tuning in today to this episode of Linguistics with Laura, and as always, I will catch you next time.